Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Well, my back feels a little bit better. Thanks for asking.
Oh, good. Good. I'm happy about that.
By the way, thank you to everyone. I put out a little tweet on the social medias and I got just a great response full of advice and
you're
help.
You're very welcome.
And support. And you just barreled into the thread like an ignoramus and told me to amputate my back.
I've heard that that can be an effective method of healing pain.
Speaking of back, guess who's back?
Oh my God, that was one of the all-time great transitions I've ever heard. We're seeing reports now. We're doing this podcast at 11:40 Eastern time. So we're only just starting seeing these reports now that Zinedine Zidane is in fact going to be returning to Real Madrid, replacing Santiago Solari. I can't say if this is true. I can't say that it's shocking. Zidane would always be candidate one, I think, if you were going to ask Real Madrid about who they would want to replace Solari. Mourinho's name was obviously being spoken about a lot. That, I don't care what his relationship was with Florentino Perez, that always felt far-fetched to me, just with the way Mourinho's career has kind of gone.
Yeah, but we don't know what kind of appointment this may be. This may be till the end of the season. This may be... although,
Zinedine Zidane is not taking on an interim role with Real Madrid but out of all competition.
Why is he coming back to a club that he left because he identified the problems that have now manifested themselves?
Well, I could think of a couple reasons. One, money. Two, maybe he wants a couple months in charge to identify what he can work with, who he wants on this team, what the dynamic is like in
the
locker room.
And hand out the shopping list.
And then during the summer say, okay, I've been here now. I can tell you, yes, Bale truly is a problem. Yes, you know, he can do that now. Whereas if he just came in the summer, maybe he'd be relying on the words of others. It could be he said, she said in terms of conversations
it's
with
not
players.
Even
he'll get his own look at it.
It's not even a year since he left. I honestly think this might be a misstep from him. I think he saw the systemic problems in the club. He saw an aging team and did not want to take them through what will be a really difficult transition. They've had two managers, Lopetegui, who they didn't even really want, and then Solari, who they clearly don't want anymore. I'm shocked by this. Shocked.
Shocked that Zidane is taking the job?
Shocked. Not shocked that...
or that it was offered
to him. You say he's candidate one. I mean, if you're a candidate, I suppose... it works two ways. You have to be in the picture to take the job yourself. And I would not have thought that he would put himself in the frame for this one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I call him candidate one, not necessarily because of how he may feel about the job. I'm just saying, if you spoke to Real Madrid supporters after they won their Champions League last year, probably none of them would have felt comfortable with the idea of him leaving. Now, is he someone who's capable of overseeing a rebuild?
Yeah.
Because... yeah, I do think, you know, every rebuild is created differently. Obviously, Real Madrid, no rebuild is going to take all that long when you have that kind of resources. But I think what we saw this season in the league and what we've seen now in the Champions League with them going out, the Copa del Rey, there is at least some kind of rebuild that is set to take place at Real Madrid. You know, when he came in last time, it was all pretty much there for him. They just needed someone to like oversee this and, you know, set it forth in a way that works.
And there's
no more Ronaldo. Like, who's the guy? You know, Luka Modric, okay, you want to say he's their best player. How old is he now?
Yeah,
I mean, he's
on
the wrong side of 30. They're in a different position, certainly, than when he came in and took this job over in the first place.
And it's not like he came in and achieved the league dominance that they would clearly like to have. I mean, I wonder how much they'd like to have it. If you keep winning European cups.
No, I think that
they'd like to be better in the league. And he didn't even do that. Although we mentioned on last week's podcast with Sid Lowe, Sid said that Zidane's favorite memory of being a manager was the league win that he managed with them, the league championship trophy, rather than any of the Champions Leagues.
Yeah.
And look, the league is the bread and butter. This is very interesting. I want to be clever now and say, give a Shakespearean quote, "Beware the Ides of March, Zizou." And I've just done it.
You're very clever. And we're all very impressed. I'm truly intrigued by how this will go. Not at all in terms of the next couple months of this season.
Because they're playing for nothing.
Right. This season is now kind of etched in stone as far as I'm concerned. There's no way back to kind of take anything positive out of this season. But the learning process in front of him, which players now turn it on. Like they're now playing for their job.
But the same players who were what's interesting is the players who posed him the biggest issues and the reason he didn't return, the Benzemas, the Bales, the aging Modrics, the tractor Cruz, who was compared to a tractor, wow, 2 weeks ago. You know, all those players are still there. The Sergio Ramos, like he's not going to come back in, Andrew, and see that much of a difference. I'd say the difference he will see is that Isco and Asensio will be more crucial to a contemporary Real Madrid and Zidane right now than they were to Santi Solari, who fell out with Isco. So I don't think he's going to see that much different. That's what makes this curious.
Yeah. Who do you think is happy to hear this news on Real Madrid?
Isco, probably.
Yeah.
Asensio, although, again, those guys were not exactly nailed on starters under Zidane, but they certainly played more,
like,
I would think.
Like, what does this mean for a Bale?
To remember the context of the Champions League seems to wipe away a lot of Bale's, you know, it complicates Bale's legacy at Real Madrid, because on the one hand he has these trophies, on the other hand, you know, he wasn't a guaranteed starter going into the Champions League final last season.
But his legacy is so weird because it's not just that he has these trophies. It's the part he played in them acquiring them. Well, like the goals that he scored in Champions
right,
League
yeah,
finals.
But look at, if I was to pinpoint actually the only game Real Madrid played in all these Champions League games where I thought, wow, was the final in Cardiff in 2017. Bale is tangential to that.
Uh-huh.
Completely tangential to that. So I don't...
All right, so in one of them, he played a bit part role.
Mm.
But like,
I don't know.
He
I don't know.
Two
it's
in the
weird.
Last one, the winner that he scored against Atletico.
Sure Real Madrid fans are ecstatic about this.
I certainly think so.
We should probably say no more until it's confirmed.
Well, I just saw at ESPN FC, it's now breaking news. Graham Hunter has a story up there on it. So it looks like this is now a thing that is happening. I will tell you one thing. Selfishly, I'm breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief, because anytime a high-profile job outside of Barcelona becomes available, because Pochettino has said he wouldn't go to Barcelona after his history with Espanyol. I get worried, but with Zidane going in there, it looks like this vacancy will now be filled. That should be that.
Okay.
So there you go. We'll see. I'm so curious now. I'm just curious at how all this is going to go. Like, they always say,
we're going to have a Champions
sometimes
League.
You can't go home again.
Yeah, you should never go back. We're going to have a Champions League podcast on Wednesday night, so maybe we'll know more.
Yep. Let's see. We go from Zidane, JJ, back to England in the Premier League in what was really a fascinating weekend, more for the race for the top four, I felt, perhaps, than the race for the title. We will talk about the title race in a sec, but the status quo did remain there, whereas the top four... you saw Spurs go on and lose to Southampton after holding a lead after the 75th minute. They had an unbelievable streak. I think they had 42 consecutive wins when leading a match after 75 minutes. That, no more. Arsenal goes and jumps over Manchester United in their 2-0 victory. And then Chelsea with a chance to pick up ground on Tottenham and Manchester United in this case, they blow that opportunity with a 1-1 draw against Wolves, a draw that they were fortunate to have gotten.
A bit of Hazard magic pulled that one out of the fire,
yeah,
and they weren't good generally.
They really weren't. Now, we'll go through this in terms of the order in which these clubs are. It's, Tottenham are third, Arsenal are fourth, United fifth, and Chelsea are sixth. They're separated by just 4 points right now, those four clubs. So for each one, I have a question for you, and we can kind of bat it back and forth. We'll start with Tottenham. Right now, it's hard to say anything other than the fact that it feels like they're in a bit of a free fall. This is a four-game stretch for Tottenham where they've taken 1 point. That ties the club's worst four-game stretch in the Premier League since they lost six straight in the early part of the 2004-05 season. They also went 0-3-1 in March of 2012. How do they stop this?
They have to win. what else is there to say? Because they've got Liverpool at the end of March. And then they've got two very winnable games, including a game against Huddersfield. But they need to win right now. When is that Crystal Palace game, by the way?
Well, it's been postponed.
Yeah.
I don't know when the makeup date for that one is. And I wonder what sort of psychological effect that will have on them, because they now have a weekend where they will not be playing, which is good in terms of getting guys healthy. Dele Alli just came back. Eric Dier's just coming back. Kane is still sort of in the stages of just coming back. So these guys could probably use a little bit of a breather. But they're going to get passed now. And see themselves looking up
right
at that fourth spot. I just wonder if that can play mind games with a club.
Mourinho said on BN Sport last week when he was talking about Liverpool and the way that they surrendered initiative that it actually does. It's much harder chasing, especially when you've been in a position where you had a commanding lead over those below you. And it'll feel almost like helpless. Because after a defeat like Southampton, those players are going to want to get out the next day and try and remedy this. And they're not going to get that opportunity. Psychologically, that could have an impact.
Yeah, I remember in thinking about that, it takes me back to when Spurs were chasing Leicester City for the title. And if you remember, they had a stretch of like four or five consecutive late season games where for whatever reason they were the Monday night football game and Leicester kept on winning, and it just felt like the pressure on Spurs to keep pace with that was just building and building, and then it all exploded that day at Stamford Bridge. I hope it's not a similar effect, but
Mourinho,
I wonder if it will be.
Mourinho described that as he said you're playing two results. You're playing two games. Uh-huh. You've got the game that they've just had. The pressure of that is on you, and you've the pressure of winning your own game. And that's an actual thing, he said.
The unfortunate thing for Tottenham in this game is that, at least in the first half, my God, the number of chances they had to just put this one away. They hit the post and the crossbar. I really thought they played great. The fact that they were only one up, and the one goal came on a play that probably shouldn't have been allowed. It looked like Harry Kane was a step or half a step offside. Boy, they really did play well, and they just, if you don't take your chances, even a club like Southampton, who have struggled this year, they will beat you.
Pochettino mentioned afterwards his dismay at the drop-off in play between the first half and the second half, and I'm wondering, is that a fatigue issue because of midweek?
Well, he put it down to complacency.
Well, if that's the case, then it's his job to remedy that. He is laying that one at his own door.
Hard for him to remedy that in a game where he's not on the touchline, when he's been banned to the stands?
Could be a factor. I'm not sure. I'd love to see what the data is on in terms of drop-offs and results for touchline bans. I don't know.
I saw this tweet from a guy, you know, the Tottenham podcast I listen to, the Fighting Cock. There's a guy who's on it, Alex from Bristol, and he said this afterwards, and I know morale. I can tell you how I was feeling after the game. Like, I was just done with sports for the weekend by about noon on Saturday. He said this: I think you have to look at that and accept that the top four has probably gone. With the games we have coming up, the focus that will be given to the Champions League, United's form, etc. I looked at that and thought, wow, that is really fatalist, for considering the fact that Spurs are still third.
We're going to get to Chelsea in a minute, but I don't think anyone else is talking like that. I don't think you should talk like that.
I don't think so either.
He's entitled to it. He's a fan.
Of course.
But I don't think anyone inside Spurs is going to be thinking that way, or else.
Nor should they.
Nor should they.
I saw that. I thought, wow, you are in a dark place right now.
That's too much.
Yeah.
That is
now,
too
probably
much.
Was their worst loss of the season. I don't want to get out of this portion without at least saying that James Ward-Prowse is in just unbelievable form, and it feels like England call-ups have to be on the horizon for him.
I would think so, too. There's been so much talk about him for quite a few seasons now, but I suppose he's been in a struggling team. But his form of late has been absolutely electric, and he's garnering a lot of attention from pundits who are saying exactly what you were saying, that an England call-up should be forthcoming from Gareth Southgate.
And what a huge win it is for Southampton. Trailing as late as they were, and now they do move 2 points clear. They come out of the drop zone. They're 2 points clear of Cardiff.
Which is just disastrous, considering Cardiff managed to pull off that win against West Ham at the weekend, which was huge for them. You're thinking Spurs will do us a favour, and it all conspired against them.
Yeah, the only club more upset this weekend about this result than Spurs was definitely Cardiff City. We move on, JJ, to the club that's currently sitting fourth and in scorching hot home form right now. That is Arsenal, who, once again, at the Emirates, defeat Manchester United 2-0. So here's my question for you on them. All eyes are going to be on their back line, as has been the case for much of the season.
Yeah.
Can a club with such suspect defending finish in a Champions League place in a year where the Champions League places are so hotly contested?
That is such a tough question. My instinct is that they cannot. I don't think... Honestly, when I saw that team line up against Manchester United, I thought, oh my, oh dear. Three at the back, a Socrates in there who I don't rate very highly, and also... I didn't see enough protection for the defence. And also, Koscielny playing, who is, I think, obviously one of their standout defenders. But for me, they just... How would I put this? and Arsenal fans are going to jump on me. I know they had a hot start, and I understand that. And actually, at times, they played quite well in that formation that I'm currently criticising. But on another day, Andrew, that's 4-2 to United. And that's my worry. That you look at this weekend and think, well, if they can knock off and inform Manchester United, even with these defenders who are subpar, in my view, and a setup that I don't think covers them enough, that they'll get away with it. But I don't think they will. I honestly don't think they will. I think this weekend was an aberration. Lukaku should have had a hat-trick. United were a better team. And we'll get to Solskjaer's comments later. But look, are things better under Unai Emery this season than they were under Wenger last season? Without question. Here's a tweet that should give hope to Arsenal fans. Daniel Story said this: to put Unai Emery's performance into some perspective, as he has been lambasted by some fans this season, Arsenal are currently on course for 76 league points. They have reached that total once in the last decade. Heard Charlie Nicholas saying Arsenal are worse now than under Wenger. Obviously entitled to his opinion, but they're 3 points behind last season's total. So on paper, I'm seeing things that would make me very confident going into this final stretch for Arsenal. But Andrew, you've pointed it out. I don't trust that they will be able to hold up with this defence.
Yeah, the form table or the year-on-year table is kind of interesting to me sometimes. Arsenal at this stage last season, 30 matches played.
Yeah.
You know how many points they had?
No.
Just 48. They have 60 right now.
That's crazy.
I don't know if that speaks to Emery doing something right or just reminds us of how disastrous the end of the Wenger reign actually was. God, it was so ugly.
Now, look, I'll get criticized for doing this, but just in case you're not happy with my eyes and their view of what happened at the Emirates against Manchester United. I mean, the XG is very much weighted towards a United win.
Yeah, it is. Although I'm actually, it's funny you say that. Sometimes you and I we're just on the same wavelength. I actually just pulled up the expected goals table for the course of this entire season, and Arsenal's expected goals on the season are actually higher than Spurs.
Interesting.
By almost 2.5 goals. So I know early in the season that stat was way against Arsenal, but maybe things have normalized a little bit. But you're right. On a different day, Manchester United could easily win that game.
That's all I'm saying. I still have the same concerns I had. By the way, going forward, there's a lot to like.
Yeah, I do want to say one thing. We're talking about the back line. That was the conversation that started this for Arsenal. But to ignore what they have in attack right now with Lacazette and Aubameyang, who we have felt consistently throughout the season are at their best when they're playing alongside one another. Mm-hmm. I think you saw it again. Lacazette was unbelievable in this game. And I did think that that was a penalty.
I didn't think it was.
I thought there was just enough. It wasn't as hardcore of a penalty as what you can see. But to me, there's just enough tangling of legs maybe for Lacazette.
I don't think it was a penalty, but to Arsenal fans, you're still winning that game because United just couldn't find the net.
Yeah.
It was one of those days for them.
Yep. The conversation with Arsenal and United are linked because they played each other. So we go to United next. And the question that I would have on them for you is, they expelled so much energy to get back into this race, which has been admirable. I give them credit. But are they now more likely than not to run out of gas?
No, I don't think so. And I think if you listen to the manager's comments, which we have here after the game, he is not buying into anything surrounding fatigue or European hangovers.
Is it left you scratching your head? Was it the chances that you didn't take, or you just weren't quite yourselves today?
No, it's not scratching your head. Sometimes that happens. You know, we hit the woodwork twice. We got 4-5 very big chances ourselves. Some days strikers take them. Some days they don't. And today I can't remember any saves that David had to make, proper saves that they had chances. Of course, penalty. I think the referee will be disappointed when he sees it, because I don't think it's a penalty after seeing it on telly. And, of course, a strike. I just didn't think the ball flew everywhere. So they didn't really carve us open.
And they didn't. And honestly, there's still a freshness to this United team, despite having to deal with some quite significant injuries, particularly in the midfield. I don't think that's the case. I would not be talking that there's an energy and a verve about this team. There's also a youth. Let's be honest.
Now, Solskjaer did say something else that was not included in that clip, where he said, it's been fantastic so far, but today is the lowest we have been because we lost and missed the chance to put pressure on Spurs.
Yeah.
Well, I sometimes wonder, like, for United, this is their first loss since he took over, not including the PSG one, which wound up being an epic win for United. You know, they always say about, like, a horse race, like, horses that take part in horse races. The first time
you crafted that sentence so beautifully.
Like, sometimes a horse that just keeps winning and winning and winning, the first time that they actually lose, they're never the same after that.
Yeah, American Pharoah.
Is that right?
No. Oh. The American Pharoah,
Pegasus.
American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, and then I went to see him in New York in the Preakness. Mm-hmm. I think it was the Preakness. Oh, I don't even know. He lost whatever it is. I don't know.
But, like, I do you think that that could be a thing here for United, that's just been so good, so good, so good, and then kind of a deflating, frustrating defeat?
I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. I don't feel that. Watching them play, Solskjaer made the point that he said we actually played better in this defeat to Arsenal than we did in the FA Cup win against them. And I would concur with that.
Let's see. And then we move to Chelsea. Boy, this is harsh to say, but probably the afterthought of the group.
It's incredibly
right
harsh.
Now. Well, and that's the question. Is that a fair label for them to carry?
I honestly, Andrew, I think those drop points at home to Wolves, hugely damaging. But more than that, the performance wasn't very good, and it took a piece of individual brilliance from Hazard, who thankfully is in form for them, to pull it out of the fire. Now, Maurizio Sarri disagrees. He's actually quite chipper about their chances. When you have only 10 matches, every match you're not able to win is a missed opportunity. Today was a great opportunity, but we were not able to gain 3 points. In the last 6 matches, we won 4 and drew the other 2. So there is a little consistency in this moment. We have to think only to the next match. We need to recover 2 points immediately. As I said before, we are in a moment of consistency. We have only to continue. We are confident, of course. We have to be confident. So he feels as if there is a consistency to this Chelsea team that means they will regain those 2 points.
He's chipper because he can't believe, I can't believe I'm still here.
Yeah, and also I can't believe we didn't lose that game.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, so look, that's what the manager's saying. You would expect him to say these things.
He said something else that you would not expect.
Okay.
So when Sarri went through what we'll refer to as the dark times, of several weeks back, all of the talk, Gab Marcotti, you know, defenders of Sarri, people who despised Sarri, everyone agreed on one thing, and that is he will never change. But then there's this. Here's what Sarri said. In the last 20 minutes, we played a new system, 4-2-3-1. Uh-huh. For Jorginho, it is very difficult to play when the other players don't have movement without the ball. When I decided to play 4-2-3-1, Jorginho was not suitable. He brought on Willian for Jorginho in the 72nd minute. JJ, correct me if I'm wrong, but this sounds like change.
Yeah.
That's good, right? But, change, good.
But, Andrew, they changed in the League Cup final, but it was completely overshadowed by Kepagate.
That's true.
He did tweak things. And the interesting point that he consistently made was, you know, Sarri ball. Don't talk about Sarri ball, although I doubt he used the term Sarri ball, but don't talk about systems or the way I like to play. We're not playing anything like that. It's not a failure in system. It's a failure in good football. We're not playing well. So these tweaks here are fine, but Wolves were pretty comfortable. I got to be honest with you. No, he unfairly criticized Wolves in the post-match as well. He said that they defended, almost accused them of parking the bus.
Not all. I mean, he talked about how unorganized they were. Was that the word he used? He just made it sound like there was 10 guys back there and it was just chaos defending.
I think that's dreadfully unfair to Nuno Espirito Santo's team.
The goal Wolves scored was a beautiful display of counterattacking football.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why managers look with such disdain on the counterattack. It is a way of playing.
Oh, yeah.
It is not some fluke born out of, bad play or disorganized play. By the way, one thing you can't call Wolves against top teams is disorganized. They only get disorganized against Huddersfield.
That's a great point. It will surprise no one to know that Wolves, of all of the non-top six sides, have taken the most points off of top six sides this season. Like I said, that is surprising to no one. By the way, you know what? What the hell?
It's time for Boy Wonder Why, Christian Pulisic!
Oh, that boy really is special.
It's nice to be able to play that again.
Yeah. For all the Chelsea fans out there lamenting the transfer ban coming up, don't forget, Boy Wonder will be joining your squad. And don't forget, he's still good. Because some people have forgotten that.
His 10, 12-minute cameo.
JJ Optajack.
It's time for Bench Wonder Boy.
Optajack tweeted over the weekend in the wake of Christian Pulisic's tremendous performance for Borussia Dortmund off the bench. Since the start of the 2016-17 season, Pulisic has 3 games with a goal and an assist off the bench. No player in the top 5 European leagues has more in that time. Boy Wonder. He is still, in fact, a wonder. Maybe not a boy.
That was a an impromptu Bench Wonder Boy watch.
Well, because he's going to Chelsea, and I think it's important that their fans are reminded of the fact that like they are actually getting a good player. I've seen, which game was it after? Oh, after the Dortmund Spurs first leg.
The home game. There was a lot online. Like,
there was a lot of anti-Pulisic sentiment.
Why are we
Chelsea
buying
fans.
Him? Yeah. Why are we buying him? He's rubbish, isn't he? Yeah. American.
Yep. There was a lot of that. And I think they need to be reminded, no. He's good.
That's fair.
I am not even going to try to make a prediction right now for how the top four is going to finish out.
Let's just revel
I'm a coward,
in.
But
let's revel in the enjoyment of we have a title race. Close race at the top, close race right down to fifth. Let's enjoy that.
One thing, do you think it plays any role at all that it does actually look like Tottenham are going to be moving into their new stadium before the end of the season, which I honestly had given up all hope of?
I don't think that makes a difference.
No, it means everything. They're probably going to win the league.
Cheese boards.
The
billion-dollar cheese board.
Your disdain for cheese is mind-boggling.
I love cheese. I love cheese.
You wouldn't know it to listen to this show.
I love cheese and a glass of wine. I just don't want to pay $1 billion for it into my stadium.
So that's what they're paying for.
Yeah, the cheese. The cheese is hugely expensive.
Gotcha. Elsewhere around the league.
Fondue parties.
And I should say before getting to this, in the second part of this podcast, JJ, for people wondering, we are going to talk at length about what happened in the championship over the weekend between Birmingham City and Aston Villa. Greg Evans of the Birmingham Mail will join us to talk about that. So, like I said, if you're wondering, how have they not mentioned that yet? Don't worry. There's going to be a lot on that. Before, though, we talk about that, like I said, the status quo remaining intact at the top of the table with both Manchester City and Liverpool winning over the weekend. We've played 30 games. It feels like we're kind of now making the turn and heading down the stretch, JJ. I don't know. People can say, oh, City are going to go on and do this. Or people can say, oh, Liverpool are better. The City have injuries. They'll find a way. I don't know how anybody could possibly look at the title race right now, much like what we just did with the Champions League spots. I don't know how anyone can feel confident about any way that this could go.
Yeah. And you know what an interesting stat that was? I was listening to the BBC 5 Live soccer podcast, and Conor McNamara said, Liverpool have never had any more points than this stage in the season in their top flight history. And he's not talking Premier League. He's talking way beyond 1992. And yet, one defeat and they're a point off. And it just goes to show you how consistent City have been with their wins, even though they've lost 4 games, which we never thought would be the case. I have no idea how this is going to go. The Champions League ties this week are going to factor in. Advancement, we expect City will advance. We don't know what's going to have to happen to Liverpool. I heard John Giles speak last week saying if Liverpool go out, it will be a bonus for them. It will definitely give them an advantage. Incredible. I concur. I agree with what you're saying. I'm not sure how this is going to shake out.
I hope you're not going to be watching Liverpool-Bayern and thinking about that.
Like, no, I'm not. I've told you.
You want to win that,
right? Here's how it works. I've told you I want to win every game. When kickoff happens, it doesn't matter. Everything goes out the window. You want a good performance and you want to see your team win. But, I mean, ultimately, I want them to win the Premier League. But I'm not. It's not like I'm willing them to lose in Europe.
Like, are we going to see some kind of like Brendan Rodgers away at Real Madrid squad thrown out there?
Oh,
for this one.
No, Klopp doesn't operate that way.
You better not.
By the way, thanks for bringing up that. That was one of the lowest points.
Yeah.
That was, what was it, Gerrard on the bench.
Mm-hmm. At the Bernabeu.
That was his last Champions League run as well. Can you imagine the rage?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, you talk about we were talking before, Manchester City are 7 points off of where they were at this stage last year. Amazing that that could be the case and they could still be top of the league.
It's nuts.
It speaks to what they were last season. Yeah. Liverpool, though, plus 13 from a season ago. Yeah, wow. And then one other one, JJ. I know Newcastle, Everton, in terms of like where they are on the table, doesn't necessarily pop off the page, although those are two like pretty high-profile
clubs.
We do our Devonlings at the end of the year where we hand out awards, and one of the biggest awards of the night is usually our match of the season. That one over the weekend between these two is now, I think, a serious contender to take that Devonling home.
It's definitely going to feature. I enjoyed it immensely, and I'm sure Everton fans enjoyed the first hour or so, and then just a collapse, really. And St. James's Park was on fire. We got a few tweets from people who are dead right when they say, if you're looking for the best atmospheres in the English game, you're going to St. James's Park. You're going to that place. There's nobody in the top six can compare with that. I include Anfield on a European night. Maybe on a European night, but
God forbid.
But seriously, it is unbelievable how they drove that team on. Very interesting, from the Newcastle perspective, the way Ayoze Perez and Solomon Rondon are linking up now. That goal, the first goal they got back, was a beautiful goal.
The volley.
A great volley. Jordan Pickford. I've said this before in the podcast, so I'm not jumping on him. I've been consistent. He is too wound up in these games. He gave away the penalty. He should have been red carded, in my opinion. There's a move by referees away from, like, given the double jeopardy and sending him off as well. I think he should have gone, though. It was a rugby tackle.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
So that happens. He whiffs on the ball and then tackles the man.
Yeah.
Was it Rondon that he took down?
So, yeah, it was Rondon. Yeah.
And then he gets up and he's arguing. What could he possibly be saying? Now, is he just arguing?
Argument was probably that there was a
cover. Don't give me a red?
Don't give me a red. Okay. There was a covering defender, or the ball was, it wasn't a clear tap in, which it was. But that aside, I don't care what anyone says about the strike. Was it Almiron's strike for the equalizer? He's got to put that anywhere else. He can't put it back into play.
Yeah.
It's straight down the barrel. Put it up, put it over.
Now, it was hit with great pace, but
I totally agree with that, but this is England's number one, and he has not been that good this season. If anyone is suffering from a World Cup hangover, it's Pickford. And all of a sudden, Newcastle are back in it. And then to compound things, everybody's offside on the winner. Everybody. I'm offside, you're offside, everyone is. And even still, the second phase, where I guess the linesman would justify not putting up the flag because Perez moves in and out, he's a mile offside.
Was he?
Well,
I'd have to go back again to see that.
Well, he's not. Well, hang on. The second phase for me is he's not offside. Everybody's offside is the first point. So the flag should have gone up. But then the idea that Perez is moving back from an offside position, Rondon gets the nod on, so that's automatically second phase. That, to me, is really problematic.
By the way, to start that, we're going to consider what Yedlin did as an intentional pass.
Little lob
was,
back
that,
in.
That was not the worst shot attempt in history.
No,
the pass.
I think it was a hit and hope, wasn't it? Little lob in there. I didn't think it was a shot. Good Lord.
Well, he wound up like he was trying to fire one out from 23 yards to win the game.
Either way, the idea that Perez can be deemed not active, run about 3 yards, and the ball takes one touch and he's active again. We need... I'm not buying it.
Yeah, it was a thrilling game. And you're right, that place, when in moments of drama, that place is as good as any. Is it something about, like, we always talk about the Scottish lungs, Newcastle is up in the northeast of England. Like, is there just something, like...
Yeah.
From, like...
It's a guttural, primal passion.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. The noise they make, you're right, is different. But the accent is different as you travel north. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
I sometimes wonder about that. Like, different, like when Porto scored in the Champions League... the noise that they make, because they don't scream like here in the U.S. and in England. I think when a goal goes,
yes!
Everyone screams yes. In Spanish speaking countries, I think they all scream. Are they all screaming goal?
Well, that's what it sounds like. But in a stadium where it's all happening at different seconds, it sounds like oh.
It's an amazing noise.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, Greg Evans of the Birmingham Mail is going to join us to talk about what were just awful scenes over the weekend when a fan ran out onto the field between Birmingham City and Aston Villa and sucker punched Jack Grealish in the back of the head. It was really, really troubling stuff, and we want to dive a little bit deeper into that, into the rivalry, all that and more. So don't go anywhere. A lot more to go. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, as we talked about just before the break, this was a bad weekend in terms of frightening fan interaction. An Arsenal fan ran on the pitch and pushed Chris Smalling. A Hibs fan confronted Rangers captain James Tavernier. And then perhaps the most high-profile attack of the weekend, a Birmingham City fan running onto the pitch and sucker-punching Jack Grealish. And now to talk more about that specific incident, we're joined by Greg Evans, sports reporter for the Birmingham Mail. Greg, what's up, man? How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Just still getting used to all the events over the weekend, really. Been very busy.
Yeah, I could imagine. Now, I guess we'll start at the kind of the top of all this. We know the intensity of this rivalry, but was there anything leading into yesterday's match that maybe had fans like a little bit more frothing than usual?
No, I mean this derby is, you know, eagerly anticipated in this city. You know, throughout the season, when the fixtures are announced, this game is the one that Birmingham City and Aston Villa fans look for. The last few games between the two teams have passed without any major incident. And to be honest, there wasn't really anything building up to this one. The fact that Birmingham City were above Aston Villa is a bit of a, before the game was slightly unusual, because Aston Villa were expected to obviously get promoted this season and be ahead of their rivals. The only other sort of added spice to the game was that Jack Grealish, the Aston Villa player who obviously has hit the headlines in recent days, he was playing at St Andrews, the home of Birmingham City, for the first time in his career. So he was the only player out of all 22 players to actually have a specific Birmingham or Aston Villa allegiance at the start of the game. So the fact that he was there on his first game might have indicated why some of the problems started.
Greg, what do we know about Grealish's assailant?
Well, look, he's a 20-year season ticket holder for Birmingham City. He obviously was arrested last night, and we're just waiting to see sort of what happens now, what action and what punishment is taken. Birmingham City have said they will, it will be a lifetime ban. He will never be inside the stadium again. That's pretty much obvious, but we're just waiting to see if there will be any further action. But you know, the fact that he's been a season ticket holder for 20 years just shows that. I mean, I can't really put into words the incident, disgusting, disgraceful, you know, however you want to describe it. But so, did he have that in his mind going into the game that he was going to do that? Or, you know, from the court hearing today, it sounds that, you know, his lawyer has said that he wanted to, he just wanted to go onto the pitch and just rev up the fans a little bit. And it seems that he got carried away, but you know, that's lawyer talk, so, you know, we'll leave that up to him. I personally believe if he's gone and done that, he wanted to do it beforehand.
Yeah, Greg, one thing that I'm curious about, I mean, you couldn't help but kind of be struck by the fact that as he's being taken off the pitch by security, he's blowing kisses to the supporters. I mean, I'm so curious, what sort of response has this gotten from Birmingham support? Are you hearing more condemnation from the fan base, or is this guy being propped up as almost some sort of cult hero?
Well, listen, it was a bit of a mixed reaction. I think, you know, a section of the fan base got carried away with the incident and sort of cheered him off. But then another, probably a larger proportion of the fans realised what a shocking incident it was. I think, just I'm going to say this first and foremost, I think the incident alone, you know, does not, certainly should not represent Birmingham City as a football club, because this club has connected with the community on so many, you know, different levels this season. I just think it would be unfair, really, for this club to have sort of a worldwide reach of just based on this incident alone. But yeah, just going back to your question, that, you know, there was a section of the supporters that applauded him off, which I think is just, you know, morally wrong. And Dean Smith, the Aston Villa manager, came out and said after the game, he said that he thinks that society needs to have a bit of a lesson, because for people to do that when such a shocking incident just happened on the pitch, I think is wrong, you know, regardless of what type of game this is and regardless of how fiercely contested the derbies. But yeah, I thought that the atmosphere was red hot leading up to that incident, and I think as soon as that incident took place, it just shocked the whole stadium. I think the atmosphere went flat, and a large percentage of those Birmingham City fans were shocked and appalled at what they'd seen.
Greg, those of us who remember the bad old days, and again, I'm not having a go on it. I think you're right. We shouldn't harp too much on Birmingham City or say that this is representative. But there was the pitch invasion against Leeds in 1985, 1992, again, a pitch invasion against Stoke where the referee was hurt. And then 2002, when in the Derby game, with the incident with Peter Enkelman, where he was assaulted after letting in that own goal. Like, did Birmingham think it had sorted out its hooligan pass? Because look, most clubs in the Midlands did have hooligan firms. Birmingham had a fairly prominent one. Do you feel as if that Birmingham maybe got complacent in their reaction to football hooliganism?
Yeah, again, I think football in general thought that they'd got away from these incidents, and the fact that we've seen three in 3 days, just highlights that it's clearly becoming a wider problem again. Because okay, the Birmingham City incident was the worst out of the three, but you just got to look at the individual more than the club. I think, you know, let's be honest, it could have happened anywhere. I know it happened at Birmingham, and I know they've got the history. But going back to all those 2002, since they last had any major problems, with an incident similar to that. So I do think that they got away from moved away from it. I think the only thing that they would need to do now is just tighten up their security. And you know, the club have come out and said that. They've said that they'll review all the security systems in place and look at that going forward.
Greg, Jonathan Wilson wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated where he kind of tried to connect together a thread about maybe British society and how football's problems aren't just football's problems, they're society's problems. And he talked about the rise in violence since the Brexit vote in 2016. I'm just wondering, as a football man, as someone who goes to games, as someone who is, you know, on the streets in England, have you seen a perceptible rise in violence or in aggression on the streets in general?
You're taking me a little bit out of my comfort zone here. Because I predominantly talk about Brexit, but I have to admit, in the circles that I socialise in and work in, I haven't noticed any difference, and I honestly don't believe that this, you know, all these incidents have any reason for that. I mean, you speak to somebody else, you might get a different opinion, but that's just mine.
Greg, I'm curious, is there any concern that Birmingham as a club could face punishment, whether it be a fine, some kind of points deduction? Is there anything like that been talked about?
There is definitely a concern. Yeah, I mean, there's you know, high profile football figures and have come out and said that there should be a stadium ban or there should be a points ban. And I think that the club will be fearful of that now. Personally, I think that, again, I'm going back to what I previously said, I think it would be unfair to punish the club in that way. But then at the same time, you know, you've got to think of how serious the incident is. You've got to think of, you know, if I was a family member of Jack Grealish who's watching that on, or, you know, a close friend or a teammate or something, then, you know, I would be calling for probably one of these heavy, serious crackdowns, you know, or bans. So I think it is a genuine concern at the club. And, you know, if the powers that be want to make some real authority on this, then maybe they'll go that way.
Greg, last one. I believe it's this Wednesday where Millwall visit St. Andrews, a fan base that, fair or not, brings its own reputation with it. Are we expecting some kind of like military police presence for this one? Or do you think this weekend's match was just a standalone incident?
Well, I really would like to hope that, and you know, I really pray and hope that that this was a one-off incident, and you know, there is no repeat of that. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it, that Birmingham City have got Millwall as the next game, because, I mean, Millwall's fan base have eased up a little bit from in recent years, you know, previous years, but yeah, it's a fixture that brings together two previously, you know, very violent and active hooligan firms. Whether there will be any of the, you know, of those members, or certainly not too many of the members at that game, you know, we'll wait and see. But I think policing will be stepped up on Wednesday. I haven't found out the exact details about, you know, whether there is any going to be any extra extra members on board or anything, but I presume that they will be, you know, tightening up security and the systems in place because of what happened at the weekend.
Well, it's been a wild couple of days, kind of for the wrong reasons, but we appreciate you, Greg Evans from the Birmingham Mail, giving us some time here to shed some light on this incident. Thanks so much, man.
No problem. You're welcome. Take care.
Our thanks to Greg Evans from the Birmingham Mail on, man, that was, you. I don't know how it is for you, but like, I know things are particularly bad when I'm in various like text chains with friends. I have friends that love soccer. I have friends that text me about Philadelphia sports, friends that we text politics and sports. And a friend of mine who could care less about soccer sends me a text message with a link to the video right after it happened, saying, Gunling, what is this all about? And like, that's when you're like, okay, this is reaching like other stratas of society that don't typically pay attention.
NBC frightened the life out of me because in their early game at halftime, they said, when we come back, a shocking incident that in English football this morning. We'll talk about that in 30 seconds. Don't do that. Don't do that. Tell me straight away. Shocking incident? Like, right. That just heightened things. And I was worried someone had been stabbed killed.
It's a big, like, local news tactic. Like,
I know, but like,
coming up next, the food in your pantry that is slowly and quietly killing you. Stay tuned. Like, no. I want to know right now.
I might have a bowl of this food right in front of me.
Right.
Also, English football's history with, like, tragedy. Tell me now. Don't delay it.
Yeah.
By the way, that article that I mentioned, the Jonathan Wilson argument, article arguing about the different strands of what might feed into such behaviour is on Sports Illustrated. People should read it. This is the final line in it. The issue, anyway, runs far beyond Birmingham or even football. This is the country Britain is becoming, a place where cowards run up behind people wearing the wrong coloured shirt and punch them. This is a symptom of a society that is grievously ill. Britain is rotting from the head. And he talks about the austerity measures of the Conservative government in England since 2010. He talks about the uptick in violence since Brexit in 2016. It's a compelling argument. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I'm shocked that Greg was uncomfortable with your question about Brexit. I'm surprised your next question wasn't, Greg, do you believe in God? Where can we go from here?
Sorry, I'm trying to tie things together.
It's honestly fascinating, but I'm just not surprised that he'd be like, oh, wasn't expecting that today.
One quick one. At DreForever16 tweeted us, hey guys, with the recent issue with fans entering the field, should clubs put up some type of barriers to prevent fans from entering the field?
I am not for that.
No, I think English football's history with barriers and pens and stuff, no.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to... There obviously has to be a reaction to this happening. It was really, really ugly, and I'm sure the players felt uncomfortable for the rest of the match. And then we saw it a couple other times. You know, we saw it with Rangers, like I said, and we saw it in the Arsenal match.
By the way, like I said, it happened Neil Lennon.
Yeah.
What, 4 years ago, 5 years ago? At Hearts, a fan runs on and assaults him. Because it was Scottish football, we didn't hear that much about it, but it's almost like for like with what happened with Grealish. And that was at Tynecastle against Hearts. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's obviously a thing that can always happen, but I don't know if you want to start talking about penning people.
I don't think so.
One guy who handled this about as well as a human being could possibly handle a situation like this was Jack Grealish, who got punched in the back of the head and then looked up and saw that it was a fan, and he just sat there. He didn't lose his mind. He didn't try to go at the guy. He just kind of did the thing that I think you hoped a player would do in that kind of situation, and that was just let security handle it. He then goes on and scores the winner. By the way, you're Paul Mitchell. That's the name of the guy who was arrested for doing this. Like, you've run out on the field. You've punched him in the head. Like, you're banned for life.
Yeah.
You're going to jail. Oh, by the way, the guy that you did that to, he also just beat your team by scoring a goal after you did this.
Like, I wonder, did someone deliver that news to him in the prison, in the holding cell?
Did we win? No, we lost.
Up the Villa.
Well, who scored? Grealish. Sorry, pal. Here's Jack Grealish afterwards on what was a fairly memorable day for him.
How would you describe what's happened to you today?
Best day of my life. To come here, you know, for the first time. Obviously, captain Aston Villa and scored a winner, you know. It's what dreams are made of, especially for me being an Aston Villa fan.
You've seen the incident back with the fan, though. What are your thoughts?
I was just unaware at the time. Obviously, I was just I think we had a corner, was it, or a throw-in in the corner. And obviously I was walking into position and then I just felt a whack around the side of the face. Obviously I don't, you know, there's rivalry and stuff in football, but I don't think there's any place for that really. But, you know, I just tried to get on with my job in the end and I think I did, you know, I scored the winner and we come away with 3 points. So. Yeah.
How sweet a moment was that to get the winner?
It was unbelievable, you know, in front of our fans and stuff. And after what happened in the first half, I think it was, you know, I think it was set up for it. And like I said, you know, captaining the club here was something I've dreamed of since I was a little kid, so over the moon.
Good for him, man.
It actually made me smile listening to that again. Grew up a Villa fan. He's a Birmingham lad, which was pointed out in Birmingham City's statement. He said, Jack Grealish is a Birmingham lad and doesn't deserve to be treated this way. And
as if, like, a London lad would deserve it.
No. But just generally, like, that is so beyond the pale. This is beyond giving abuse. You know, I remember Lee Hendry, Birmingham fans used to give Lee Hendry lots of abuse when they used to meet more regularly in the Premier League. But this is...
No,
it was a fair... I hate the word fairy tale, seemed totally inappropriate, but it was almost a fairy tale finish for him, right in front of the Villa fans too.
Yeah.
You know, just great.
Yep.
And he jumped straight into the Villa fans.
Oh yeah.
I don't think he's going to be fearful. He doesn't seem like someone who will suffer PTSD from this.
Yeah,
I hope not.
I don't think he was kidding when he said this is the best day of my life.
No.
That seemed genuine.
I'm so glad that, you know, he's been Villa captain. He was captain last weekend. He's had quite the week. That volley.
The goal he scored.
And now to score the winner in his first trip to St. Andrews.
Yeah, pretty cool, man. Let's see. We have a mailbag.
@CEOSoccerPod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. @CaughtOffsideESPN on the Instagram. Loads of you following us there. We need more. We need way more. Garrett Weiss begins with just a classic one. JJ Devaney, A. Gunling. I took my girlfriend on an airboat ride, found this guy smiling at us from the shoreline. This is Gareth, who is an Orlando City fan, who regularly chimes in and sends us pictures of crocodiles, alligators down there. Because Andrew, for those of you who are new listeners, we haven't mentioned this in a while, Andrew has a recurring nightmare about these beasts attacking him.
Since I was a little kid.
Yep.
I haven't had one in a while. I wonder if this will reignite it. But yeah. Weird.
Yeah,
no one's ever really been able to explain it to me.
I love the way anytime he comes across one, Garrett,
he can't wait
to tweet it. That's great. iTunes review here.
Oh.
So this is an interesting addition.
Yeah, everyone should do that.
Yeah, give us an iTunes review, and if they're funny or interesting, I'll read them out. So this is a weird one. So the headline is, "Thanks, boys." It's from Brian Viss 2007. He left it on Monday. 5-star review. So I'm like, oh, this is nice. Huge dorks. But I love them, and they are my guilty podcast pleasure. Keep up the good work, gents. Now, that is
That's terribly insulting.
That is a compliment.
No, it's not.
That is an insult wrapped in a compliment, right?
No,
it's a little cocktail sausage of insult, because a guilty pleasure is something that you're embarrassed to tell other people that you're into.
So how are you finding anything redeeming in that? That's just a straight-up insult.
He said he loves us. You called a huge dork.
These guys are enormous dorks.
Keep up the good
I
work,
hate
though.
Them.
He didn't say
I refuse to why acknowledge
you, why
the
have
people.
You gone to hate?
I won't tell anyone that I listen to them because of how the embarrassment and shame it would bring to my family. That's what I read from
By
that.
The way, on the guilty pleasure front, I think we all have them.
Yeah,
I think we should
course,
just call them pleasures, though. If you enjoy something, you enjoy something. What's your guilty pleasure in terms of culture or food?
It used to be The Bachelor, although I have stopped watching it. I grew bored by it. I no longer watch it.
The same kind of petard week in, week out.
So now I would say, you know, in terms of sports, you know, it's always been kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. I think I'm one of the last...
Tractor pulling?
No, I'm one of the last people on earth that still loves NBA All-Star Weekend.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, even though I acknowledge the game is like a sham. But yeah, I don't know. I still like get all pumped up for the dunk contest. And, yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. My guilty pleasures include, you know, reality TV like Mob Wives on MTV, which I used to watch. I don't know why I keep
watching. Never seen it.
Yeah, it's bad, but I watch it.
Okay.
And Slipknot. The music of Slipknot.
All right.
Men wearing masks. And I wouldn't say it's not trash metal because there's melody to it.
Yeah.
It's actually good. They've got a lot of good songs.
All right.
And Corey Taylor has a nice voice.
I don't criticize people for their musical choices.
I listen to...
It's deeply personal.
I listen to Slipknot in the shower.
All right.
Is that weird?
No, not at all.
Ben Porco. Hey, Andrew and JJ, been a somewhat recent listener of your pod and have very much enjoyed the content, hashtag content. I'm a massive Bairn fan and this season has been very much up and down for the team, although more up lately, Ben. Niko Kovac is an inexperienced manager who has had to deal with a team in transition with club legends Robin and Ribery leaving at the end of the season. But after the winter break, the team has improved tenfold. Would be curious to hear your thoughts on Bairn this season and their outlook for the remainder of the season. Keep up the good work, guys. Well, their outlook all of a sudden is they're in a title race. Very much in a title race, which they were not in. And they're also going into the second leg against Liverpool in good shape compared to what has been befallen other teams who've played Liverpool in the Champions League.
We do have a what to watch for coming up.
Should we talk more about them?
I don't want to totally preempt that.
All right, okay. I've got things to say about them, but it's more in an overall sense.
Respect the format.
I will, sir. Kevin Stiles. Hello, lads. Love the pod. I was listening to your analysis of Solskjaer and agree. In my opinion, he still needs to earn the job. Did we say that?
Well,
hang on.
I think he's kind of speaking to what I was saying.
Yes.
That there's no reason to... You don't have to give it to him yet.
Ah, right. For all of Manchester United's drama last season, they got 81 points. That's title contenders most seasons. Aside from PSG, one game, they have not achieved anything unexpected by last season's standard. Now, I'm not saying Solskjaer shouldn't be considered, but they were clearly underachieving under Mourinho, and I can't shake the feeling a responsibly competent manager would get similar results with the talent they have. Paul Ince agrees with you. Paul Ince pretty much said he could do the job.
Well, I really think...
I agree with Andrew. Dare you. Let the season play out, but it shouldn't be Solskjaer's job to lose.
I really think that we kind of need to look no further than with what just happened to Santiago Solari, who came in at Real Madrid to replace Lopetegui, dragged Real Madrid. Remember, there was an episode of this podcast where we said they were now back in a title race.
Yeah.
All right. And then what happened after that? They crashed out of the Champions League and they've crashed out of the Copa del Rey and there's no more title race. And Solari's out of a job. Now, would it stun me if Manchester United's season took that kind of a turn? Of course it would. But it could, but it's possible.
Sure.
So, like, there's just no reason to jump into this yet. He's doing a great job. Manager of the Year contender, perhaps. But, like, just wait.
Carly DeManet. Hi, Andrew and JJ. I was listening to this week's Champions League episode, and your discussion of Ajax reminded me of a recent Sports Illustrated article on Eddie Hamill. It's easy to view top athletes as being superhuman, somehow immune from the events that take place in the real world outside of the playing field. This article erases that notion and highlights the tragic story of Eddie Hamill and his family during World War II. I'm sorry to send such a sobering article, but I thought it was a story that deserves recognition. I'm so glad you sent it. This is called Remember the Ringleader by Michael McKnight. He was the first US-born player to compete at the highest level of European soccer, but Eddie Hamill's Holocaust story, not his stardom with Ajax, is the reason he must never be forgotten. Thanks for the continued entertainment and soccer analysis. I've listened to the pod for almost a year now, and I continue to recommend it to all my soccer-loving friends. The best way to promote the pod is to do that. By the way, I can't wait to read this. This sounds absolutely fascinating.
Oh, my God. So you're not kidding.
Remember the Ringleader, Sports Illustrated, Michael McKnight. I think we should all read that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to reading that. Well, you know what I mean. Oh, also, Ajax, the Dutch, the War by Simon Cooper is one of the best articles if you're in that Ajax-y mood, which I think a lot of people are right now. Finally, Scott Sippling. Hello, gents. First, let me say I love the pod. It is a true joy to listen to the two of you discuss soccer, especially with the dueling European and American mindsets. I've been an Everton supporter for 10 years.
Smugness meets daltness.
I've made this decision due in part to my undying love for Tim Howard, steady, and also the desire to pick a side with history that I knew would always be scrapping to achieve anything. As a Philadelphian, this is something I was already familiar with prior to the Phillies Championship in 08. So when I decided to make my first trip to England several months ago, I knew I had to make the pilgrimage to Goodison Park. It was a happy accident that my trip happened to coincide with the Merseyside Derby. When I arrived in Liverpool on the Saturday before the Derby, there were two things that struck me. One, the people of Liverpool were an absolute delight. Scrappy, rough around the edges, but with a charm and welcoming nature that really struck me, and a true sense of pride about being a Scouser.
Nice.
This plays into what Scousers would like people to think of them. When I explained that I was there for the Derby, the question every time was, red or blue? When I said blue, the reaction was the same every time. oh no, or I'm so sorry. I even had an Uber driver jokingly tell me to get out. In fact, I didn't find a fellow blue until I was standing in the shadow of Goodison. And when I did arrive at Goodison, the experience was simultaneously everything I had expected and completely surprising. It was emotional to stand next to the Dixie Dean statue with the crest looming over me in the background. There was a true sense of foreboding and nervous energy, feelings I am deeply familiar with as a Philadelphia fan. There was a sense of pride in the club and also this sense of I'm allowed to talk badly about my club, but I will fight you if you talk badly about my club.
That is one of the most Philadelphian traits that I can think of among sports fans.
Overall, it was an experience I will not soon forget. It was one of the best days of my life and cemented an already lifelong love of soccer. I can't wait to go back and be a part of it again. Thank you to the people of Liverpool, thank you to all the Blues, and thank you to Everton Football Club. Also, thank you to Caught Offside for furthering my love of the beautiful game. Wow. We deserve no credit. But a nice story.
That was a great email. I enjoyed that.
So there we go. That is the mailbag.
Some people aren't ashamed.
Ashamed of what?
Listening to this podcast.
Oh my God, you're still hanging on to that.
I've had it with them.
I think that iTunes review was generally nice.
The fact that it was left as an iTunes review, meaning everyone can see it, I think he's kidding. And I'm going to choose to take it that way. And I appreciate it.
Why are you the slightest insult goes straight to your heart.
Oh, this day is ruined. It's simple as that. Let's see. What to watch for, JJ? It's another Champions League week, both home and abroad. UEFA, Tuesday, 4 o'clock, Juventus and Atletico Madrid. Juve's lead in Serie A has now gotten truly out of hand.
It's grotesque.
It's an 18-point gap between them and Napoli.
They hammered Udinese at the weekend.
Yeah.
It's like 4-1.
Here's an incredibly odd stat that I read today at ESPN. You ready for this? Mm. Try to follow me. 13 of the... So it's 2-0 on aggregate right now against Juve.
Yeah.
13 of the previous 16 teams to win 2-0 at home in the first leg of the Champions League knockout round went on to advance.
Yes.
However, 3 of the last 4 were eliminated. I don't know what that means. Probably doesn't mean anything, but it's just weird.
Yeah, one of those was PSG. So that is interesting.
Weird.
Yeah. Do you know what was a bit odd too? Juventus made a hype video.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I loved about this hype video was the authentic Italian accents.
No chance. We're out. We're going to do it.
I believe it.
We've never come back from 2-0 in a first leg.
Is it tough? Of course it is. It's a Champions League, baby. Nobody ever said it was going to be easy.
I'm not a quitter. But this time...
We never give up. Never. Never.
Yep. Who exactly are they trying to appeal to there?
Oh, the global audience. That's the way football's gone. I love... There's nothing nicer than that north of Italy authentic Italian accent. Well, no gonna quit.
That is weird.
It is odd, isn't
That's
it?
Super weird.
By the way, you're 2-0 down and you're Juventus. Your hype video does not need to be so downbeat to begin with.
Well, we didn't play the whole thing. It takes a turn.
Oh, they start getting excited when they see the gates of Glasgow. Yeah, bruv, I'm really excited about Juventus. Yeah. In it, bruv.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Tuesday, 4 o'clock, Manchester City and Schalke. Is Manchester City...
They're through.
Okay. Are they... Who's your favorite? To win, I think they are the odds maker's favorite.
I haven't checked the odds. Are they really?
I thought I heard that at ESPN FC.
Huh. Was that the 538 odds?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know.
Because after their Man United debacle, they don't.
The bookmaker, JJ.
The bookmaker, excuse me.
The bookmaker.
All right.
Makes these odds. I don't know. You can look that up, I guess, if that's what you're doing over there on your phone. I can't tell. Could be porn. Wednesday at 4 o'clock, Barcelona and Lyon, 0-0. Is the aggregate for this one, heading back to Barcelona. Boy, Father Time is just not slowing down Lionel Messi. He's up to 26 goals this season, which is currently the most of anyone in Europe's top five leagues, as are his 12 assists. He just will never stop being awesome.
Yeah, Ivan, you've just given me an image now of an old man with a long beard, like trying to pull his jersey in the box.
Yeah, he's like...
Father Time gives away a penalty.
Like, you know, Uncle Drew...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like going to be messy when he's 80 years old. By the way, Barca are unbeaten in their last 29 Champions League home games. That is tied with this club from 98 to 02 for the longest ever such streak.
Say that again. I was on odds.
Bayern Munich.
I was on odds.
For all of you who were paying attention.
I was on odds checker.
Bayern is the answer. And then, JJ, Wednesday, 4 o'clock, to the Allianz Arena we go for Bayern Munich and Liverpool, also 0-0 on aggregate. This is one that I'm sure you're excited for, win or lose. It sounds like Liverpool fans have decided that no matter what happens here, it's all good.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can't wait to lose.
No, that's not true. And I think, if anything, Liverpool are in the driving seat in this one.
From the Bayern perspective, with his two goals over the weekend. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, yeah, Robert Lewandowski over the weekend became the league's all-time leading goal scorer by a foreign-born player.
That's interesting.
Topping Claudio Pizarro. Also, Hamas scored his first goal since October.
Yeah.
In their 6-0 win over Wolfsburg.
Yeah. Can I read this quote by CEO Karl-Heinz Rummenigge? Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard a more tepid endorsement of a man that they're going to sign permanently? But I have to say, everyone here is happy with him. I assume that Hamas will be at Bayern next season. You assume? I'm sure Niko Kovac has a similar view of Hamas' quality and that he's very happy with them. I don't think the two of them have had a problem.
Yeah, that's so right. It is just like
tepid and weak. It's like, I assume he's signing. I don't know.
I think
Niko Kovac likes him. I mean, I've never seen them have a problem.
That doesn't feel like a very well-sourced statement. There's lots of, like, maybe, kind of, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, things are weird. I feel like Bayern in this moment are trying to find which direction to go in. Do you keep being FC Hollywood and you buy in to replace these stars, you buy in a Hamas or maybe even someone of a higher profile? Or do you pursue Callum Hudson-Odoi, who is unproven yet hugely talented?
You can do both at the same time.
Yeah. I wonder, are they going to go that way?
Well, the direction that they're going right now, at least in the league, is a very, very positive one, JJ. Yeah. If they are to go on and win the league, after trailing like they have this season by as many as 9 points in the standings, it would be the biggest comeback since the 08-09 season when Wolfsburg trailed by 11 points match day 18 before going on and winning the title.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Wolfsburg they put the beat down on the weekend at?
Yeah, 6-0.
6-0.
And it's because of that 6-0 that they are in first, because they jump over Dortmund. They're tied on points, but they're ahead now on goal difference. By the way, for Liverpool, Sadio Mane scored 2 goals over the weekend, so he now has the 5th most goals in Premier League history for an African-born player. You want to play a game here?
Who would guess who has the most goals?
Well, who are the 4 ahead of him?
Drogba?
He's number 1.
4 ahead of him?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm blanking.
Let's see. Do you want hints? Give me a hint. Let's see. One of them has played for both clubs associated with the North London Derby.
Oh, our friend, our tall friend who likes to slide on his knees and go to Manchester City.
Yeah,
okay.
Are you going to say his name?
I'm blanking on his name now.
Emmanuel Adebayor.
Adebayor.
He's number 2. Let's see.
And so we need a third one.
3 and 4. Mane's 5th. Let's see. Let's go to 4. I'd call him a Premier League legend. Let's see. He's, what's a hint here? A good hint for him.
Long ago or recent?
Fairly recent, but then kind of a steep drop.
Oh, okay.
Like, was amazing and then kind of just suddenly disappeared.
Oh, no.
All right, Yaya Toure.
Yaya Toure?
Yeah.
Interesting.
He's got 62 goals. Sadio Mane has 60. So there's a good chance Mane will catch him this season. And then number 3 on this list, JJ, probably played, let's see, probably most known, I don't know, Nigerian, Everton, I'll just tell you, Yakubu.
Yakubu.
Yeah.
Well, Yakubu had a heck of a run at Portsmouth, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's played in a few places.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The Yak.
He is 3rd on that list. So there you go.
That was bad by me. It was really bad.
Yeah, it was, sadly. Let's see, CONCACAF Champions League, JJ, Tuesday, 9 o'clock, Santos and the New York Red Bulls. It's 2-0, Red Bulls trailing for the second leg as they were shut out, obviously, in the first leg. The Red Bulls did, however, hold an advantage in shots over Santos, 14-10, and shots on goal, 6-4, and corner kicks, 7-0. How they managed to lose 2-0 is I don't know, sometimes numbers, I guess, can lie.
But they've done that before. We saw last season against Chivas. They should have won that game at home, and somehow they managed not to. So,
yeah,
it's happening again.
Tuesday, 11 o'clock p.m., Tigres and Houston Dynamo.
Houston have no chance of going through in this one.
They're down 2-0.
They're finished.
Okay.
Forget about it.
Wednesday, 8 o'clock, Atlanta United FC and Monterrey. It's 3-0. Atlanta trailing.
Bringing it back to the Benz, you would have thought that things are, you know, trending in the right direction. But if anyone who watched Atlanta versus FC Cincinnati yesterday, they were slow, one-paced. He persists, when I say he, Frank De Boer persists with 3-4-3.
Yeah, here he is on the disappointing start to the season.
They were a little bit spoiled with the results, of course, of last season. Everybody expected, and that's also normal, that, you know, everybody also saw what happened with Toronto when they played the Champions League last season. And, you know, out of nothing, we weren't used to play every 3 games and so every 3 days a game. And now, in 17 days, we play 5 games or something like that. Yeah, that's a lot. And we also play, especially, you know, Monterrey is just a very good team. It's not a team that you think, okay, you're going to beat them away. So we were very close, I think, to a very good result, 1-0. But again, you know, we have 2 setbacks in last 9 minutes and now last 5 minutes. And yeah, that's hard, of course, and because, you know, everybody gave 100% for it to get a good result.
Here's the thing that doesn't sit well with me.
You can't say those things.
To talk about people being spoiled from last season, okay, fine. Maybe some of that is true. To talk about, you know, Monterrey being a good side that you can't just assume you're going to beat, fine. But like, get hammered by them? 3-0?
Yeah.
Shots were 17-5? You know, like,
they ripped them apart.
I mean, like, that's... And I know they've lost Miguel Almiron, and I know that's a really important part of what Atlanta are, but, like... You're right. Okay, fine. No one is saying you have to go out and win this competition, but you can't get... Like, you're the cream of the crop in MLS. You can't go and get crushed by a Liga MX opponent. You just
but also, you can say, oh, you know, we've got caught out again, or, you know, we have this schedule that we haven't had in previous seasons. Nothing explains Michael Parkhurst getting pulled out of position for that goal, for that this massive gap opening up for FC Cincinnati to score. That's a systems failure. He doesn't have the personnel to play 3-4-3, and he persists with it. Also, you know, Pity Martinez just looks like he wishes he was anywhere else. He hasn't settled in. Something's not right there.
It's a worrying start, and I think it's worrying partially because people can't quite forget what happened with Toronto last season. And
yeah.
And I think there is a part of people that are wondering, is it going to happen again?
No, the fans are on his back already, and yeah. Someone tweeted us last night, will he last till April? Well, he should, because, like I said, the jeopardy isn't there. If you believe, Darren Eales hopefully did not, and it would be totally against what we've seen from Darren Eales already, he hasn't signed or made sure they got this manager because the manager doesn't have a plan just because he's Frank De Boer. He must believe in the plan, and he will have time to execute that plan, because unlike Crystal Palace, you know, there's no danger of relegation or anything like that. So yeah. Give him the time.
Let's see. One other one in the CONCACAF Champions League. Thursday, 8 o'clock, Sporting Kansas City and Independiente with KC going back home down 2-1. And then one in the championship, which we did mention with Greg Evans earlier. Wednesday, 3:45, Birmingham City and Millwall. Boy, of all the clubs to be headed there next.
Incredible. At St. Andrews.
Yeah.
And you know... Millwall's travelling support.
Oh, it's
going to
be
I hate to
an
brandish them, but it's going to be such a ferocious atmosphere, you would think.
Yeah, I'm sure security will have their hands full.
I mean, you're going to see a lot of yellow high-vis jackets, I would imagine.
Yeah. So there you go, man. Fun show to start off your Monday. I hope people enjoy it. We'll be back midweek with a recap of the second legs of the upcoming round of Champions League matches. Where are you going to be watching Liverpool Bayern? You decide.
I might go to Carrers, I think, and try and imbibe the culture. And I will wear Liverpool red. And
boy, the way you can just come and go from work, it's honestly, it's stunning.
This is my work. This is my passion. This is my everything. What are you even talking about? Look at you sat there.
Yeah.
just assuming that the biggest thing on Wednesday isn't going to be. Like, it football supersedes everything. That's the bottom line.
Including your job.
This is my job. This is everything, Andrew. This is it. Oh, by the way, yeah, I think the atmosphere will be red hot. It's one of those games where you're, I think I need to be around people. You know me.
Yeah, I get that.
Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I need to be in contact.
No, for big games, I have to be around like-minded people because I then get
not
like,
always, though.
But then, like, sometimes people who, if I'm around people who just don't get it the way that I get it, it makes me even, it compounds my anger.
There is always the danger you run into the person that's more tense than you and they just end up annoying you for the game, though.
Well, I guess that's true.
Because people are people.
Well, it should be fun. That we know. Our thanks to Greg Evans from the Birmingham Mail for joining us earlier in the show. As always, people can reach out to us on Twitter at COSoccerPod, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. What's the Instagram?
Instagram, caughtoffsideESPN on the Instagram. You should come and follow us there.
Or leave your iTunes review because, quite frankly, that probably is the one that helps the most, being candid with all of you. Well, hey. This was a lot of fun, man.
Brass tacks with Andy.
To you, I say.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.